Parshas B'Shalach is particularly rich. Every parasha. Because Yisrael are in a very rich midpoint. Ramban describes Sefer Shmos as the Sefer Agos V'Agula, the divine cosine. Back up to see Klal Yisrael very briefly, Yaakov and his children and Eretz Yisrael. We watch their very rapid descent of the course of Parshas Shmos. And step by step by step begin to climb out towards Gula. And in B'Shalach, we're already very much in transition. Last week, Parshas Bo, we saw Yetzias Mitzrayim, Mamon Har Sinai, and Asiyas HaMishkan are yet to come. There are many different parts and pieces to the rich melange that is Parshas B'Shalach. Near the end is a piece of the puzzle that can easily get missed. I want to spend a couple minutes thinking about the very end of Parshas B'Shalach, which has the distinction of being one of the only areas of Chumash that's described in Haggadah in Mishnayos. A number of features of the Talmud Bavli that are common in the Bavli and very rare in Mishnayos. One is Drushus, and another one is Haggadah. The Mishnah, Haggadah is common in Pirkei Avos, but outside of that, it's hard to come by. In the context of Tkiyas Shofar, near the end of the third parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, because there are four prakim, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the first two are about Kiddush HaChodesh, the last two are largely about Shofar, the halacha lemas about Hilchos Rosh Hashanah per se. Mishnah is talking about different situations where I have a kosher shofar and someone's blowing the shofar using proper procedure and yet I may or may not be yotze. Paragimel Mishnah Zayin in front of you. One situation, it's a question of the physics. Another situation, it's a question of the psychology. Mishnah says, blowing a shofar by blowing a shofar in a place, in a closed space, which should create a kol habar, create echo, like that walkway right down and around outside. And Mishnah says, if you hear the actual sound, you're yotze. You hear the echo, you're not yotze. There may or may not have ramifications for use of microphones, telephones, recordings. Not for now. We proceed to the second half of Mishnah Zion. The Mishnah said, let's talk psychology. I'm blowing shofar. The sound is great. The sound is perfect. And someone put her up.
What to thank Rabbi Tani Gold for coming. Drink? Hot cold?
I'm good, thank you.
Sorry.
You ready to enjoy breakfast downstairs?
Oh.
Nothing like Turkish coffee anymore. I mean that seriously. Yes, he said the Mishnah begins with a question of physics. Am I hearing the sound? Am I hearing the echo? Then the Mishnah moves to a question of psychology. The sound is great, but the sound was outside of shul. And the question is, was kibin libo or lo kibin libo? Did the tokeya within and the passerby outside, did they have in mind that he's being yotze with him or not? Kibin libo yotze, lo kibin libo, lo yotze. And the Mishnah takes that, as several of the farshim suggest, as an opportunity to sort of verge off into what seems entirely unconnected to Rosh Hashanah and Shofar. Take a look at Mishnah Ches. Pasuk in this week's parsha. Hayak hasheyarim hosheyadov v'gavar Yisrael. The Jews' first military encounter under the generalship, sounds like the generalship of Yehoshua. They go to war. First Tzahal, since the Bnei Yaakov had left Eretz Yisrael. They go to war against Amalek, and what determines their success is remarkable. What determines their success is going up, what's happening up on the mountain above. Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting there, his hands are in the air, the Jewish army is successful, and his hands drop, they begin to retreat. So much so that Aaron and Hur ultimately come and support his hands, and that sounds like that's what drives the Jewish victory on the battlefield. The Mishnah says, "Piyadav shalosa osas mochama, shopas mochama." I do with Moshe's hands. Magic? What's going on? And Lomar Lacha, Mishnah says, "No, you gotta look more subtly." Because the mantra is shown the stakum klapei mala, meshavdin es libam, la'avim shevashamayim, hayim es garim. The Jewish people, Moshe's hands are up. The Jewish people are looking up looking, and his hands are looking at the sky, they're thinking about Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they're subordinating themselves, they're surrendering themselves to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's when they're successful. But not, I know. The Mishnah says this isn't the only case of that sort you find in Chumash. Later, deep into Chumash Bamidbar, the story of the one of the times that Klai Yisrael suffer a plague, and the solution is to take Nechash and Nechoshes, they're suffering from the snakes. Nechash and Nechoshes, there's a copper statue of the snake placed on the stick, and that somehow solves the problem. Once again, the Mishnah says, what is a copper snake going to do? Sounds like hocus pocus. The Mishnah says, not hocus pocus. It's not really about the snake. It's not really about the snake. It's about looking, you look up, look at this. Once you look at the snake, you begin to look at the sky, you begin to think about Kadosh Baruch Hu, an echo, perhaps, of the Agadah in Maseches Menachos about Tcheles, about how thinking about the sky gets you to think about Kisei HaKavan and Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you Mishabdim as Libam Lagim Shvah Shavayim, that there's a sense of Shiva Tirmal Shalom, so that's really what was healing the Jews. It wasn't Moshe's hands, it wasn't Moshe's snake. At Tiferes Yisrael, Yisrael Lifshitz, on the bottom of the Yachin Avod, that's a fascinating comment. He says, okay, it's interesting. The very fact that we sort of took a major leap here is striking, particularly in the context of Mishnah as opposed to Talmud Bavli. We're talking about Shofar. And the first one said, okay, well, we're talking about Kavanah, the power of Kavanah, so we jump to the power of Kavanah. Quite a leap. From Kavana, Halachic Kavana by Shofar, to Kavana by Melchemes Amalek and the Nechashim. But putting that aside for the moment, Tiferes Yisrael says, can we be careful what the Mishnah actually said? The Mishnah said that when they would look up at Moshe's hands, they would look up at the copper snake, then what happened? What would you expect the Mishnah to say? What do you think the Mishnah said? Looked up at the sky, and then the government. They thought about, you think that they thought, they focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they thought about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Mishnah, though, Tiferes Yisrael points out, doesn't really say that exactly. It says they're Meshavdim Liba of Yeshua Shemayim. They surrendered themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They subordinated themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tiferes Yisrael writes here in the second source on the first page, in Lamay Kamash Malam, Bakim Kishamatsli Mishmispalel Shiatsliach. Or Kishamispalel Rakli Hinatzel Mitzar. Now I want you to think about the two instances that the Mishnah quoted. One was a tefillah for positive success. One was merely a tefillah to avoid something negative. They were seeking to win at Melchemes Amalek. They were seeking to avoid the concern of the snakes in the second story. Either whatever sort of tefillah it is, whether you're seeking something or you're seeking to avoid, Eyatvil Nishmaz ki in shemiskaven sheyachaskeir Hashem la avodas sal yisbar. It's only going to work if your intent, if your goal is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should strengthen me for His avodah. That's interesting. You say, well, strengthen me for His avodah. Where did that happen in the Mishnah? The answer is, well, because the Mishnah didn't just say we're focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Mishnah, Mishabdim Liba. They were surrendering, they were rendering themselves as Avadim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the significance of that Tiferes Yisrael suggests is it's not just I recognize that I'm talking to God. It's something larger. I'd like to spend the next couple of minutes briefly, this we could spend hours, and we will not, thinking about this. You might, and I might, but not together at this point in time. Over the next 15 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes, let me lay out briefly two directions of thought you might want to take in unpacking for yourself the significance of, once again, this rare Mishnaic Agadah, which is focused primarily on the end of Parshas Bishlach. I think there are two very large ideas that are packed into a very small package here. One is an idea that the Rambam discusses several places. I'm discussing maybe more famously in the third chapter of Hilchos Deos. It's on my mind because I've been learning used to be neighbors in Bergenfield. And the last number of years, I had the opportunity to learn Machshava with a group of neighbors on Wednesday nights. And most recently, we've been working our way through the Rambam Shmona Prakim, Rambam's introduction to his Mishnah by Mishnah commentary on Berkei Avos. And it's been three Shiurim on the fifth chapter of Shmona Prakim. It's the entire Shmona Prakim is rife with all sorts of profound and practical ideas. And the fifth paragraph of Shmona Prakim deals with this particular issue. It deals with briefly in the third paragraph of Chazdeus, at length in the fifth chapter of Shmona Prakim. It is possibly the most relevant, the most frequently relevant siman in Shulchan Aruch. And it relates to how do you look at the mundane part of your life. This point in your life you're spending, if you're keeping up with the Shiva schedule, arguably more than 50% of your hours are spent in outright Avodas Hashem. The numbers are exactly, they're probably between Talmud Torah and Tefillah alone, you're probably clocking more than 12 hours a day. For most of you, over the course of most of your lives, that will not be the case most weeks of most years of your lives. So what do I do with all the mundane, neutral elements in my life? The eating and sleeping, spending time with family, spending time with the Ritz Hashem wife and children, and exercising and going to work. How does that fit into Avodas Hashem? And for the vast majority of people, that's the majority of your week, the majority of the weeks of your life. Where does that fit in? The Rambam says something remarkable. The Rambam says that, he points to a pasuk. This is a mitzvah in Divrei Kabbalah. Arguably, as I said before, the most frequent mitzvah in your life, should you choose to accept this mission. And the Rambam describes the mitzvah, b'chol drachecha da'ei, to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of your ways, the pasuk in Mishlei, which he understands to mean in all the different things that you do. The Rambam says, you know, a fellow who eats, I'm hungry, I eat. I'm tired, I sleep. I need to get out and get some exercise, I go get some exercise. The Rambam says, anything wrong with that? Nothing bad. Neutral activity. What a missed opportunity. Because had I not only eaten because I felt like eating, nothing wrong with that, nothing right with that, I would have spent a couple moments considering what this eating is going to do for me. And I spent a couple moments before I was really tired, I went to sleep. That's fine. But the hours could have been transformed had I spent a couple of moments thinking about the fact, well, I'm going to go to sleep so that tomorrow I'll be well rested, so that tomorrow I can be more patient with people, that tomorrow I can be more focused in my davening, that tomorrow I can be more sensitive to people around me, so that tomorrow I can be more productive in my learning. All of a sudden, the hours of sleep, however many hours it is, I won't ask any questions, those hours of sleep have all been transformed into hours of Avodas Hashem through the application of Kavanah. It's a question of what your deliberate goal is. If it's a sense of goal and purpose, they understand how this overtly neutral activity is a vehicle to my Avodas Hashem. I'm aware of that, and that's my intent. I've transformed the neutral activity into Avodas Hashem. Rav Meir Tversky usually has pointed out to us in the past that this idea is both staggering and heartening. It's a little frightening. And it's incredibly exciting. Because you can imagine two people with identical schedules. They spend the same amount of time per week learning and davening, eating and sleeping, with their families and working out and going to work and cruising with friends, etc., 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 etc. The calendars are the same. And one fellow is being Ovid Hashem 24/7, and the other fellow is being Ovid Hashem for an hour or two a day. Because they might be doing all the same things, but their kavana is very different. And so the second fellow, whose kavana is neutral, so when he's actually giving tzedakah and davening and learning and actually doing ma'aseh mitzvah, he's being Ovid Hashem. But other than that, not. The first fellow, whose kavana and the overtly neutral activities are lamana, clearly, thoughtfully lamana Hashem, he's being Ovid Hashem 168 hours a week, 24/7. So frightening in terms of opportunity cost, it's incredibly exciting in terms of the opportunity you can seize. And that's, I think, one of the, and so the Rambam describes in Hilchos Deos, in the third chapter, worth taking a peek. And if you have more time, you can take a look at the fifth chapter, Shmoneh Prakim, and the Rambam goes on, beyond talking about sort of basic human activities, he goes on to talk about the value, potentially, of math and literature and even appreciating art and beauty, if you actually genuinely, authentically, are driven by Kavanas Avos Hashem. It's not licensed to just do whatever you want because it could be Avos Hashem. The question is, what actually is your Kavanah? That was quite clear about that. And as a matter of fact, that seems like one of the ideas, perhaps, that the Teres Yisrael is seizing upon. Am I miskaven sheyechazkeyu Hashem avodasel? Is my intent, which is very specific, is my intent that Kadosh Baruch Hu should strengthen me, enable me to carry on in worshiping Him, in serving Him? That's, I think, an echo of this idea of b'chol derechecha da'eihu. There is, I think, another key idea as well. Another key idea here as well. In terms of the sense of kavana. Take a look at that. I mentioned before that the classic Mefarshim mostly addressed the Bartanura and then others who follow him, the Tosfos Yontif and so forth. They are all a little taken aback by the context or lack thereof. We're talking about kavana. We're jumping to what seems like a very different type of kavana. The kavana for shofar isn't really this sort of kavana. Kavana for shofar is I had in mind I'm doing a mitzvah. Perhaps similar. Kavana l'shem mitzvah is kavana l'shem mitzvah more broadly, perhaps. Melchama is kavana l'shem mitzvah. A bit of a stretch. The Rambam though writes as follows. I did not recognize the significance of the Rambam until I came across a sefer written by a Tunisian Talmud Chacham, Rav Rama Cohen, courtesy of HebrewBooks.org. Vayu kasher yorim Moshe yado begavar Yisrael. The Rambam very briefly says, "Diber bechan kifi masha anachnu tzrichim bo." This Mishnah that verges into Agada, it's for what we need. The masha anachnu v'darko kifi kavanas hamesem. We're on this path, and it's according to what the Kavanah of the Masechta is. That's enigmatic. So this Sefer Avraham Yagel, which is on Babli, here, Chapter 7 Aleph, Re'isi l'harambam shakasa b'zeh l'shono, quotes the language of the Rambam, Deberkan fi masha anu tzrichimbo kafiya Masechta, Kavanaso b'zeh t'keimen de'anu asukim b'masechets Rosh Hashanah. We are, after all, learning Masechet Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is Yom Tefillah V'Tachanunim. V'kaka Amar Kain SheYisrael Hayu Mispalim V'Tzokim Hayu Misrapi. He says maybe it's a sort of a larger context of recognizing Rosh Hashanah as a day of Davening. Maybe it's not just about the specifics of the din of Kavanah for shofar, but sort of a cross between that and the larger significance of the Masechta. Cook is famous for noting that the Agadas and the Bavli, they're just as is the case that the halachic parts of Masechtas mostly have to do with official talk of the Masechta. When Masechta's getting this year? I mean, getting maybe a more challenging first bag is mostly about getting, although as you discover Sfina Dosheshes and Amir al-Akam, lots of other things come as well. But most of the halachic discussion is about it. So Rav Kook suggested that most of the agadic discussion in the Masechta also relates thematically to the overall topic of the Masechta. So it seems like what this Rav Avraham HaKohen of Tunis is already seasoned upon. This sort of captures the larger theme of Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Truthfully, when you think of Masechta Rosh Hashanah, if you think about Rosh Hashanah, it is a challenging day, as he's stressing from a Davin perspective. Because it presents Rosh Hashanah alone is a microcosm of a larger challenge we might have in thinking about davening. When you think about davening Rosh Hashanah, I think the image many people have is Machzor that has many hundreds of pages. And if you use the English translation, a double number of pages. Of course, no one here would ever do such a thing, but hypothetically speaking, maybe some of you have friends who know a guy who many years ago might have counted the pages, like how many so far, how many to come. It's we often associate Davening Rosh Hashanah with text. Lots and lots and lots of text. Once one plugs into it, the text can be exciting. The text can be thrilling. The text can be inspiring. If one has not yet plugged into it, the text can be overwhelming. But certainly, a lot of recitation. At the same time, perhaps some of you have already come across the Soloveitchik's idea of the shofar as a type of wordless tefillah. There are both halachic and linguistic implications for that. Possibly why shofar is one of the only mitzvahs that we do not just in shul before or after Shema Esrei, but in the middle of Shema Esrei. You don't say Kriya Shema in the middle of Shema Esrei, you don't say Hallel in the middle of Shema Esrei, you don't say Luv in the middle of Shema Esrei. We do all those, we don't have Kriya Satorah in the middle of Shema Esrei, before or after. But Birkas Kohanim is a form of tefillah and it happens in the middle of Shema Esrei. Shofar also happens in the middle of Shema Esrei, which is one of many indications that perhaps it's a type of wordless tefillah. Sometimes I wouldn't even know what to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but just a primal scream, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will fill in the details. Very beautiful, very moving. And then you stop to ask yourself, that's very nice. I thought tefillah is very structured, formulaic. They were talking about this like poetic, romantic, neuromantic in the sense of several centuries ago. So, and just calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which one is it? Is tefillah a lot of words, a lot of text, a lot of structure? Or is tefillah sort of like free expression through motion? And that's, again, Rosh Hashanah is sort of a microcosm of that struggle we might have in general. Is tefillah the siddur, or is tefillah walking over to the kotel and whispering my own words and saying a parak, choosing a random parak of Tehillim that catches my mood? Which one is tefillah? So very briefly, over the next 6-7 minutes or so, I want to share with you where I think a brisk meets wrestle on this issue. The truth is, those who are familiar with the literature of Nachman of Breslov, Mishtapos HaNefesh, and so on and so forth, say he certainly is a model of free expression and tefillah. I tell you, I've been at my dining table in Bergenfield, so you might know that we have a relative of ours who lived in Eretz Yisrael. When we moved from house to house in Bergenfield, he gave us a gift, a pair of PPOs. It's it's a tefillah in a circle with a border. So the border is a classic Kirkus Habayis, but the text in the center is sort of Nachman's free-flowing tefillah that he shouldn't lose his gaguim to move to Eretz Yisrael. We moved to a house in Jersey. I think that's meant to be. We're glad you're there, and the house should be successful, and you shouldn't forget that you have to get a plane sooner or later if you move here. And Rabbi Apfel is not the one who gave me that gift, but he's reminding me that he seconds the motion. Maybe with that name, then we can actually resume our conversation. Okay. Now we can negotiate. So you might think it's ironic, although maybe it's not as ironic as you think, that I think this is a nexus of brisk and pressing. There is a kind that perhaps may be familiar with. I think if we spend a couple moments on it, we'll see that he's actually capturing the core nugget of his lumbus meets this ideal of Reb Nachman, and will bring us back to Parshas Gemara. Tosfos points out steering Gemaras. Seems very technical. Kavana is critical in Shema Esrei, but how critical? The Gemara at the end of the fourth paragraph of Brachas sounds much more ambitious, robust about Kavana than the Gemara at the end of the fifth paragraph of Brachas. Top right corner here, Brachas Lamino Adeis, We don't have time for context, but the Gemara quotes Rav Elazar, I can't daven if I don't have kavanah. Period. Kavanah is critical in daven. Four block later, Lamadala days, the Gemara says kavanah is critical in daven. Yes, but really only in the first bracha. You have to have kavanah. Kavanah is important, but only absolutely critical in one bracha. Which one? Magen Avraham. Tosin says, well, which one is it? Kavanah is critical for Asher Masrei or only for bracha? Tosin says, Sasa Mahadikam Afarish. The Gemara didn't lay out all the details. Gemara gave me the basic picture of Daf Lamed, and four blocks later tells me when I said kavanah is critical, I meant, let me specify. And then, specifically in the first bracha. If Tosos, though, was written writing the Shulchan Aruch, if Tosos was writing the Code of Law, how many entries would Tosos have for these two Gemaras? Probably one, because it's basically one idea. Kavanah is critical, specifically in the first bracha. Rambam, though, did write a Code of Law, and wrote a Code of Law which is known, among other things, for his intense focus on organization. One of the Rambam's key objectives in writing the Mishnah Torah was to take the conversational Talmud Babli of the rest of the literature of the Tanakh and Amoraim and bring it back into strict logical order. Everything has its address, everything has its location, position is king, the Mishnah Torah. You would expect to find these two Gemaras, really one entry, and they very most back to back. Instead, Gemara Daf Lamed appears in Parak Dalad. Gemara Daf Lamed Dalet appears in Parak Yud. Does not seem like the Rambam take a Tosfos approach that they're all the same thing. It sounds very much like these are two different ideas. As a matter of fact, Rambam quotes the second Gemara about the Kavanah being critical in the first bracha in the context and details. He opens with the book Parak Yud and he must have Kavanah in the first bracha, then he has to go back. And he says, you also must say Amal HaKadosh. Otherwise, you have to go back. You must say Bar Masha Rav Haragashim. You have to go back. Important details, but details. Paragyur. Paragdalid, he quotes is broad strokes, big picture ideas. Paragdalid opens with there are five elements aside from timing that are absolutely critical for your Shemona Esrei to work. Item number five, Kavana. Wow. And when you read what he says about Kavana, he's very, very. He is very, very forceful about it. An essential statement. Tefillah without kavanah isn't tefillah. And he goes on to say, which means, if you have tefillah without kavanah, you're going to have to redo it. There's two very different perspectives. And he felt the need not just to tell me the practical guideline. Tefillah is ma'akev in the kavanah is ma'akev in tefillah. But felt the need to go even, as I said before, to speak in essential terms. It's not even tefillah at all. A tefillah kavanah is not even a tefillah at all. So what's going on? So Reb Chaim, to make a long story short, Reb Chaim suggests that we're using the word kavanah in two different ways, two different types of kavanah. It says, well, when you and I usually use the term kavanah, we mean to have more kavanah davening usually means arch scroll, sacks, the solar pool, whatever, haruni, whatever your favorite translation is. If translations do it for you, but kavanah is pirush hamilas. When we talk about kavanah, it usually means saying the bracha refaenu. I should be thinking about my health, other people's health. I'm talking about baruch aleinu. I'm thinking about the overall economy. I'm thinking about people I know holding on to their jobs, finding better jobs, and so on and so forth. Reb Chaim says that's kavanah number two. It's important, but only absolutely critical in. What's the more critical kavanah? Time says that's not kavanah of knowing what the words mean. It's rather what the Rambam actually says in Halacha Tzayin. She'efanes libol b'kol ha'machshavos v'yir'eh atzmo b'kuhu omeid l'fnei hashkina. To be aware of the fact that you're speaking to God. I could go through Shemona Esrei with a lot of kavanah. I'm asking for this as that. I'm sure that. Stop to think about the fact that I'm actually sitting down for coffee with the Kaddish Baruch Hu three times a day. I'm in the presence of the Kaddish. That's more kavanah only with the Hashem, a lot more fundamental than Pirush HaMeis. And Rambam stressed, shul. I was I knew I was davening, but it didn't occur. I didn't stop to think about the fact that davening means I am talking from face to face, so to speak, with the Kodesh Baruch. Why is that so critical? Why is that so critical? So Chaim says, well, without that, you're a masasa. Without that, you only realize what it is that you're doing. And that's where it comes back to brisk and brisk. Because usually we would ask ourselves, what does it mean to daven? It means to say the words consider. I know I'm saying the word consider. But saying the word consider is not what Davi did. To know what you're doing, to know that you are talking with that Kodesh Baruch. Apparently, it's like a good day. A good day, whether it's a romantic date or a first business meeting, right? You meet someone to see if you can do a deal, so you sit down for coffee. You think about the first time you met a good friend, a couple of years ago. Now you're good friends, the first time you met each other. You know, looking back, what you spoke about was secondary. But there was good vibe. It would be weird to sort of sit down with someone and just like stare at each other for half an hour. That's awkward. Obviously you can talk about stuff. But when you're creating a relationship, the content of what you talk about is often secondary to the fact that you're spending time with each other. It's essentially what Chaim implies. Of course you're not just gonna stand there in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say nothing. But what you talk about is secondary to recognition that you are spending time with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yerush Amilus is important, but awareness that you are open to Hashem, that's absolutely critical. And that begins to solve the problem. Which will the real tefillah please stand up? Is it the formal structure, Shmona Esrei, or is it the Hishtapchus HaNefesh, and the wordless shofar, and so on and so forth? The essence of tefillah is Omer L'fnei Hashem. There may not be means, we don't have time for that now. Why don't you take a peek in Riskarab's Talmud. He has another Nafkamina or two in this. But there are halachic ramifications and hashkafic implications in our understanding that the sitter is the vehicle, the sitter is the methodology, how we do tefillah. That's not what tefillah is. What tefillah is as Rambam says in Dala Tazayin, Amidu L'fnei Hashem. And I would suggest bringing that back here. That's Kivi Kavanas HaMasechta. It ties, Rosh Hashanah is a day of tefillah. And Rosh Hashanah, as we said before, sort of exacerbates some of the questions we have about tefillah all year long, and perhaps also gives us greater insight into resolving those problems. When the stakes are even higher in Rosh Hashanah, we go all out on all the different types of tefillah, on the formal tefillah and the informal tefillah, but both of them ultimately are coherent because those are different ways of doing, accomplishing a certain key goal. That key goal is Meshavdim Liban La'avim Shema Shemayim, to be in communion, to be in connection, to be in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to build a real sense of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through formal means and through informal means. I would suggest that these two very critical aspects of our Avodas Hashem, the most intensely obvious aspects of our Avodas Hashem, the richer, more meaningful, more purposeful tefillah, and sort of the broader aspect of our Avodas Hashem that comes up all the time when we're very far from Shachas Min Tamar. The B'chol Drachecha Da'eihu, both of them are encapsulated in the way this rare Agada at the end of the third paragraph of Rosh Hashanah looks at the very end of this week's parashah.